I'm really glad you're joining this class because you're giving yourself a whole new beginning and a way to look at the world like you've never seen it before. First of all, feng shui is not superstitious. It is not a religion, and it is not a cult. It isn't magic, but it is an art and a science built on the principles in nature. Feng shui itself is a complex body of knowledge that was developed in China over 6,000 years ago, and it governs the balancing of energies of any given space to cultivate health, relationships, and good fortune for all the people who inhabit it. Feng shui started out as a study of the environment and how a person could enhance their life by tapping into the natural and unseen energies present in the world. It is also a study of both time and space. So you might have heard the phrase before, a force of nature. Well, that's what feng shui is. It is the conscious and directed use of natural forces for our human benefit. And the goal of feng shui is to create balance and harmony in all areas of your life. And when you accomplish this, when you are able to balance all the facets of your life, you are successful in all that you do. Feng shui was originally conceived to balance energy. Feng shui is based on the concept of energy, pure energy. The Chinese call it qi. The Eastern religions call it prana. The Hawaiians called it mana. The Greeks called it pneuma. And the Sioux call it Wakan. The practice of feng shui is governed by a body of invisible principles. Stephen Covey defines principles as deep fundamental truths, classic truths, generic common denominators. Principles are tightly interwoven threads running with exactness, consistency, beauty, and strength through the fabric of our lives. Principles don't react to anything. They don't depend on the behavior of others or the environment for their validity. They cannot be destroyed by fire, earthquake, or theft. They are bigger than people or circumstances, and they triumph for thousands of years, time after time. The two words in feng shui mean wind over water. That is the Chinese character and symbol of feng shui. Feng means wind, symbolizing unseen forces, interiors, subconscious, hopes and dreams. And shui is water. It is the container and the physical manifestation of the invisible thoughts and dreams of the wind. So here, the visible and the invisible worlds are coupled. When we change or direct energy or qi, or the wind, the qi of the water also changes. Wind and water work in direct relationship to one another. So many of you may already be practicing intuitive feng shui. You might already be working with balance and energy. You might be feeling wind and water interacting and interrelating with each other. You might already possess that intuitive, instinctual knowledge of feng shui principles. What we're going to do is apply them in a really practical manner so that you can repeat them over and over and achieve what you want. Set your goals and manifest them. To really understand feng shui, let's go back for a moment to understand how the practice really came into being. So picture 6,000 years ago in Neolithic China. Feng shui masters were meditators, they fasted, and they were shamans. They really perfected their art of being a person in tune with and an intuitive to the world around them. They were given the task of finding safe and prosperous locations for their expanding tribe. As villages grew and populations expanded, they physically outgrew their villages and they needed room to expand. So they had to find a location. Where would they move to? The ancestors were placed first on higher ground in the new location. So the new location, therefore, had to have some kind of a hill or a mound where the ancestors could dwell and look over and protect the little community below. They wanted to make sure that the environment wasn't too hot or too cold. They needed to be protected from the winds. They needed to be protected from invaders. And so the shamans went out looking for the perfect location where the community could flourish. They wanted to make sure that they had all of the elements present so the community would grow and flourish and not be destroyed. They assumed a dragon position. And that is a position, if you just picture a dragon lying down, his back fins would be the mountains and his feet would be protective sides leading to the sea. They wanted to make sure that the land was fertile because it needed to grow food for the village. And they wanted abundant seas or access to abundant seas and water for fishing. Plus, they needed room to expand. So the shamans set out on their journey, and they usually went by horseback or camel, and sometimes they even walked for days and days and weeks until they found a location that they thought was suitable for their village. They tasted the ground. They actually tasted the soil for its mineral content. Was it going to be fertile enough? They tested the direction the winds came in during the day and night. They doused for water under the ground, and also they looked for bodies of water that would supply them food. They scouted for wildlife and sea life in order to sustain this village. They took their jobs very seriously, these shamans, because if the land failed and somehow the village was destroyed, if they were wrong about the location, if they made mistakes, their punishment was beheading. So they were very, very careful about how they selected this new living place for their villagers. They had to be accurate. They had to be right. So they began to talk amongst themselves and they began to put together these principles. If they could learn from one another, they could compile a book of laws, of principles that others could come after them and follow and maybe not lose their heads. This practice was continued in China for thousands and thousands of years, so much so that when Mao Zedong came to power, he came to power by using feng shui principles. And then when he got in power, he banned the rest of China from using these principles. You couldn't practice feng shui in China once Mao Zedong took power. It was banned in 1949, and it is only recently that people have begun to practice feng shui again, learning from their ancestors who could remember the principles. And a lot of this information was preserved in Taiwan, which was not under Mao Zedong's rule at the time. So we learned a lot of this current modern feng shui that we practice now from the Taiwanese. We have a great debt to them. That's how powerful some of the rulers of China viewed feng shui. Only the elite and only the masters were able to or allowed to use these principles. The common people were not allowed to do that. Only the priesthood and the rulers, because they were guarded and they knew that the power of using these invisible energies could overthrow dynasties. And now we have it to be able to use for ourselves today. You might want to know that Donald Trump had a lot of his hotels and facilities feng shuied. Steve Wynn of the MGM Grand Hotel fame, he's had his hotels and his properties feng shuied. Deepak Chopra in San Diego at his center, he's had it feng shuied. And the Sydney Harbour Casino and Hotel in Australia has been feng shuied, along with pretty darn much every hotel and every establishment in Hong Kong and China has had feng shui treatment done to it so that it will be prosperous, healthy, and whole. Feng shui became formalized with the use of the Luopan compass in the 7th century CE, but the principles and practices began much earlier as what we call form school. And that's what this course teaches, form school. We don't use compasses, we don't use flying stars, we don't use black hats, we don't use anything other than what is real, what is in front of us, and what we can work with. If you wanted to build a house according to feng shui principles, you would probably want to involve directions and construct according to feng shui principles. However, we're teaching form school because it is the most suitable for a Western building society and for how we live our lives. So what are these powerful principles and how do we use them? First of all, there are two orders of life to consider. One is natural law, that which we can see and measure, and spiritual or higher law, that which we cannot see by using the five senses alone. Natural law we see in action all the time. Like in a garden, when we plant a seed and we get a flower, that's natural law. But higher law, we can only see the results of how it works. In the West, we tend to compartmentalize, fragmentize, scrutinize, and isolate information. We separate the mind from the body and faith from reason. We take things step by step and we use a logical approach to problem solving. We like things neat and orderly in the West. We want to break things down and label them. We rely on scientific process and mathematical formulary. That's how we get our information. And that's not our fault. It started with those darn Greeks. We can blame them. The Greeks promoted the study of science, which presents a rational and orderly view of the cosmos, and gave way to the methods of deductive and inductive reasoning. Sir Isaac Newton's universe was black and white. It was devoid of any grays. He maintained that we are separate from nature and thus able to observe the world objectively. His ideas set the stage for the break between science and religion. Immanuel Kant told us that the concepts of time and space cannot be fully understood using sensory perception. There must be a mathematical explanation to everything. And Darwin's theory on natural selection and evolution created the first schism between religion and science. And that's pretty much the sum total of why the West separates mind, body, and soul. We were taught that. However, modern scientists in quantum physics are bringing back the concept of holistic cosmic unity. The universe is viewed as an intricate web of interconnected and interrelated energies and events. Science like Bohm, Sheldrake, and Newberg are bringing back studies of the underlying principles of unity instead of the separation of cosmic matter and events. The Fibonacci numbers and the golden ratio are manifestations of the innate harmony and symmetry of the universe. We see the evidence of them in playing cards, credit cards, pine cones, and even artichokes. The Chinese have always believed in the oneness of all things. The practice of feng shui was born out of China's reverence for nature. The Chinese based their belief that they could have a more harmonious life by emulating the balance of nature's forces in their daily lives. Feng Shui is the thought process and practice that they developed about the inherent truths in nature that they discovered and shared with each other. So let us go back to the original way the Chinese thought about life and living. And I've put it together in 8 dynamic truths. The Buddhists have 8 noble truths. We have 8 dynamic truths in Feng Shui, according to the Feng Shui specialists. Number 1, everything is alive. Number 2, everything is connected. Number 3, everything is conscious. And number 4, everything is always changing. So if we look to number 1, everything is alive. We know that our family, our pets, they're all alive. There is vital energy present in each rock and in every fork, besides every human being, every animal, every plant, and every tree. So quantum physics gives us the proof that life at the molecular and atomic level exists. But things are also alive beyond atoms with thoughts, feelings, and emotions. We react to everything we touch, see, feel, hear, smell with an emotion, a feeling, and a thought. So what are the things in your house saying to you? That is one of the basic questions we ask in Feng Shui. Environment. And your environment is alive with all kinds of chat. Is that chat negative or positive? To put Feng Shui into action for any of our benefit, we must be ruthless with the negative. We must excise any trace of guilt, shame, or bondage with the past that keeps us connected to it if it is suppressing us in any way. What that means is that now, as we open our feng shui eyes, we look at our world, we look at our things, we look at our environment in terms of positive feeling and positive action. We no longer allow have-tos, shoulds, and oughts to affect our home life and the things that we live with. We must cleanse ourselves of anything from the past that reminds us of dread, of shame, of anything negative that might be suppressing our beautiful spirits. And when we have clients, we help them do that as well. And as we go through our home, as we go through our life, we must excise those negative things that are impacting us and our subconscious on a daily basis by repeating the negative message that they're sending out. Feng Shui is actually the architecture of our consciousness and our being. We stand as a conduit between heaven and earth, according to the Chinese. That means we are the connective tissue between the visible and the invisible worlds. Number 2, everything is connected. We want to approach the world through the concept of who. The world who, not the world what, changes everything. We are molecularly connected. We are connected through a chain of energy. And I know you've heard of the butterfly effect. The name of the effect was coined by Edward Lorenz, and it's derived from the theoretical example of a hurricane's formation being contingent on whether or not a distant butterfly had flapped its wings several weeks before. It is a principle of the chaos theory in modern physics, and it gives credence to the idea that even the smallest of natural actions can affect the entire planet. This chaos theory gives form and rise to the concept of unity. When we understand that the smallest thing someone does on one side of the earth can absolutely affect the opposite side of the earth, then we begin to understand how truly united we all are and how we must unite, not at the subconscious level where 88% of the things that are manifested come from the subconscious, but at that level of 12% where we all understand that we are one. And the principles of feng shui are based on that unity of nature. And when we do grasp that, we will see that whatever we have in our universe affects us, and whatever we do affects everyone else, including our surroundings and our environment. And so the power of feng shui really, really rests in this chaos theory, knowing that the littlest of things can have the biggest and most dramatic effect. The renowned feng shui author Denise Lin has a beautiful quote that I'd like to share with you. She says, "The objects we surround ourselves with are not random. Your soul is constantly, subconsciously arranging and rearranging in the world around you remarkable patterns aimed at integration and wholeness. Therefore, we need to constantly check our relationship to our thoughts, ideas, and, of course, our random wing flapping. We don't want to cause a tsunami on the other side of the world." The third principle is that everything is conscious. Consciousness is the basic building block of matter. The entire universe is conscious. It is the organizing principle of matter. Consciousness exists way before form manifests. Somebody has to think of it before something can happen. A rock, as an example, has the consciousness of being a rock. A cat has the consciousness of being a cat. You and I have the consciousness of being who we are. Before anything happens in our world, we are conscious of it. Have you ever bought a new car and then all of a sudden you start noticing all the rest of the cars on the road that are like yours? That's awareness. Consciousness is something different. It is the idea that makes the car, and you who you are. The fourth principle is everything is always constantly changing. We know it, and many of us don't like it, but in this class, in this course, I'm going to beg you to please become friends with change. Change leads us forward. It is the guiding principle in the cycle of life and death. You wouldn't be here today if you didn't change. You would still be an embryo. But change gives you growth, expansion, and maturity. Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love, wrote, "One must always be prepared for riotous and endless waves of transformation." We'll study a little bit more about change when we talk about qi and yin and yang. But for now, ask yourself, using my knowledge of feng shui, how can I purposely change my environment to match my goals and aspirations? What is the affirmation I need to bring change into my life? So I have a little affirmation for change that I like to share. All things are always changing. Change is the most natural thing in the world. My life, through change, is getting better and better every day. I let go and I allow change to be my ally. Change is my best friend and I enthusiastically welcome it into my life. So over the next few weeks, you'll become aware of many unseen and yet powerful principles and invisible forces. To fully grasp the forces, we have to separate consciousness from the subconscious. It's interesting to know that logic and reason comprise 12% of our brain's usage, while 88% is subconscious. Most of what gives form to the world comes from our subconscious, not our conscious mind. Therefore, 88% of what you see out there in the world is formed by the subconscious, not the conscious mind. Can you imagine the possibilities? So your task now is to go out into your environment, go into your home, and take a look. You will see things differently with feng shui eyes. Don't judge anything. Just observe. Simply notice it. Simply notice what is in your environment and begin to make a list of what is there with your conscious choice and what is there maybe with a subconscious choice. Or maybe it's there because you think you ought to have it around because so-and-so gave it to you, it's been in the family, or another reason other than the fact that you just love it and like it. And it feeds your conscious and your subconscious mind. Begin to notice as you tour each room and you take a clipboard with you. Make a note of what is in your room, what you would like to keep, and what you can live without. What serves you and what doesn't. You'll make a list of all the things around your house that you can live without. And then I'd like you to do three other things. I'd like you to read the handout, 20 Ways You Can Benefit from Feng Shui. And I'd like you to look at them and make some notes about how you think you might be able to benefit if you arrange the energy in your environment in order to benefit certain things. What would you like those outcomes to be? I'd like you to then write a paragraph or two on the Fibonacci numbers or the golden ratio. Have a little time to research either one of those. Become familiar with what that means and just write a couple of paragraphs. And then write your own affirmation about change. This will live with you throughout your studies of feng shui, but I'd like you to have your very own, something that helps you embrace change and shift and process. And then we'll move on to the next module.